Guess what I saw last week?
The Michael Bay Ninja Turtles movie. Did you see it?
No.
No. Not even with your free tickets.
No.
You would have hated it.
I know.
It didn't piss me off. I didn't feel good about myself that, like, oh, yeah, I thought this was going to suck, and it did. See, I showed you. But there were no kids in the audience when I was there. I mean, it was opening night, like 7 o'clock, just full of dudes our age for the most part. I was almost certain that one fella had, like, full-on release at one point. Because, like, the movie was loud, action, action, action. Raphael did something kind of cool, like flipped into a car and fucked it up. And, like they kind of, as soon as that happened, it sort of went into slow-mo and the sound went down. You could just hear him, like, oh! And, like, you could tell he expected it to still be loud. I'm sure he was embarrassed, but that was...
I also don't like
that guy liked it.
Good morning, Movies on Up. I'm Dave, joined by the Nanu to my Nanu, the Mork to my Mindy, the Robin to my Williams.
I'm glad you made me the man in that. I was anticipating having to be the Mindy, or how about
the comic to my relief? That's
how
what
about
I meant to
the
say.
Jonathan Winters to your Robin Williams?
That works too.
Yes,
we are Movies on Up. I'm Dave. He is Ryan. Very sad. Robin Williams passed away.
You may have heard already.
Yeah, Robin Williams passed. We're not breaking the news. We're not trying to break the news. Very, very sad story. Very beloved actor. Suicide. Been battling depression for a very long time. So very, very sad. So instead of our whatever we had planned for this week, we decided to go ahead and just celebrate his career, because if you think back, like, you're going to have movies that come to your mind right away if you think of your favorite Robin Williams movie. And then if you look at his actual filmography, it's probably going to be a bunch more that pop out at you that you didn't think of right away. I did a top five. I have almost 10 also-rans. Like, I could have probably done a top 15 easy just of movies that, you know, I don't love them all, but I thoroughly enjoy them all. And I didn't dance around this list at all. That's pretty straightforward. Only one got left off because it's going to be on a list in next week's episode. But it's in my also-rans. But
it didn't make mine either.
It'll come up next week. Stay tuned for that. But no tagline this week because we forgot, and it's a very special episode. So,
and it would have just been a Robin Williams movie anyway. So I tell you what, if you think you want to win this week, just send us the title of a Robin Williams movie.
That's
it. Can even be one of the ones that we talk about.
Yep, that's the tagline. If you can name a Robin Williams movie, email it to us at moviesonup@gmail.com, on Facebook, facebook.com/moviesonup, Twitter @moviesonup. That's probably about it. We're also at moviesonup.com, but there's no way to contact us through there. You sent me the text last night. That was actually how I heard. I hadn't been on Twitter at all. I had worked all day and not checked, and you actually broke the news to me. And I was one of those things where it's like, that's gonna be a hoax. I remember Adam Sandler dying at least 3 times in my life. So, like,
I mean, yeah, that happens with plenty of celebrities, but I don't think I've ever perpetrated.
You haven't,
such a hoax,
no.
On you.
But I wanted to. It was one of those things that, not that I didn't believe you, I didn't want to believe it, and. He had a show on TV last year on ABC. It wasn't, or CBS, whatever it was on. It wasn't good, but I watched it because it's still Robin Williams. And say what you want about the end of his career. Like, I'm sure our list, I'm not speaking for you right now, but very few of his recent movies are going to make our list. He kind of started gearing towards a different audience later and not making the best movies. And maybe his late night appearances or interview appearances might have gotten old to some, but I mean, you talk about making an impact. Ryan's not on Twitter, but if you're on Twitter, everybody's news feed, everybody's timeline was just everybody paying tribute to it. Because he's done so many movies that mean something to somebody. I mean, the whole thing is just sad, but enough about all that. I don't want to get sad. He did have an awesome career, so I want to celebrate it. So, Ryan, kick us off with your number 5 Robin Williams movie.
I kind of wish that my number 5 was a little bit more upbeat than it is, but it's not. I guess it just kind of showcases that I'm not breaking any news here when I say that, yeah, Robin Williams is a really funny dude. But that wasn't all that he was able to do on the screen. He played some pretty varied characters, and I'm sure that we'll probably get into some of those as we move along. But my number five is, I guess, a more recent Robin Williams joint. He had one particular year that I think you could maybe pull a couple examples of a darker character from. And it happens to be my favorite of those three movies from 2002. It's Christopher Nolan's Insomnia, starring Al Pacino, Hilary Swank, and Robin Williams. I don't know if it was a conscientious decision or it's just a factor of when all the movies came out, but it seemed like in 2002, his sole purpose on the earth was just to creep everyone the hell out. He played unhinged villains or baddies in three flicks, like I mentioned. I think this is the best movie of those three, and I think it's the best example of him as a movie bad guy. In typical Chris Nolan fashion, there's kind of a lot of moving parts going here. You have Pacino, who's playing a cop, who is somewhat less than sympathetic. You find out very early on that his character is pretty flawed, and he's in Alaska chasing down a killer. The sun, interestingly enough, does not set, so it almost kind of keeps the murder that Pacino's chasing and the, I guess, crime that he himself is running from sort of in the light all the time. Hilary Swank is very much dogged in her investigation of Pacino as well. And the thing that I like the most about Robin Williams is, yeah, he had that ability to be completely over the top and completely out of control. And then, you know, when he was on the other end of that spectrum and he was able to dial it back, you could still see it like simmering under the surface that he was kind of just ready to explode, which I think made him really effective as a creeper, for lack of a better word, because he played it so well. He was still charismatic, but you could tell that there was just something off about the characters that he played. And I loved his character in Insomnia.
I really liked Insomnia a lot. It's one of my favorite Nolan movies, like outside of the Dark Knight trilogy. Yeah, because it is, I mean, Pacino, it's a Pacino movie. Pacino is really, really good. But Robin Williams, this was different for him in that, because this was a wide release. It was a studio film. Because that year, I mean, if you mention it later, that's fine.
I don't. I did want to mention,
I left 1 hour photo off. Right. It barely made the list. Like this number, like one through three are really. I have my easy three favorites. Four or five, they're interchangeable with whatever.
It's hard to pick where to start.
And 1 hour photo was so good, and he's so creepy. But that was like an independent release, and not a lot of people saw that. The big screen Robin Williams was different, and he did show a lot of range in some of these indies. Another one I don't know, the Bobcat one, World's Greatest Dad. But he was just so good. And I liked Insomnia because it wasn't what mainstream was used to seeing Robin Williams as. And he pulled it off. And he was really, really creepy and just really good. It was a really good performance and a really good movie. But to complete the 2002 trifecta,
oh, God,
we're going to do my number five favorite Robin Williams movie. It is the other one from 2002, Death to Smoochie. This movie's weird. It's messed up, and I don't think anybody was ready to handle it.
It's very dark.
It's very, very dark. And you throw
Ed Norton.
You throw Edward Norton, Danny DeVito, and Robin Williams out there, and I don't think people are expecting a dark movie.
No, especially when you look at the promotional art for that DVD. You've got Edward Norton dressed as a purple dinosaur. Yeah, I don't think you're really sure what to expect.
It's centered around a kid's show, which, I mean, it's Robin Williams is a longtime kid's host, gets fired. Edward Norton is Smoochie the Rhino, and Robin Williams wants to kill him. That's the plot of the movie. Like, there's a lot of double crosses, a lot of backstabbing and stuff. And, like, this is what I mean. Like, Insomnia was a creepy Robin Williams. Like, that was the dark, dark Robin Williams. His character in Smoochie, not a good guy, but it still had that Robin Williams air to it. Like, it still felt like mainstream Robin Williams, even though the movie did get a little bit out there. Danny DeVito directed that one and co-starred, and I don't think it was what people expected, because I remember this movie was, like, hyped up when it came out, and then just people just didn't seem to like it. I loved it. I think it's fantastic. I think it's really great. I compare it to Nurse Betty, where it's not what you think it is. And it's actually really unique. It's disguised as something that people want to see. And when you give them something that's not that, they're going to turn on it. And he was so fun in this movie, though, as a guy who's just going crazy and he just wants to be back on top and will do anything he can to get back to the top of the children's show business. I think it was fantastic, and I'll forever love Death to Smoochie.
It was such a good movie. I can't imagine somebody maybe doing maybe that's my problem, is I think people do research on movies before they go see them. But, I mean, if you read or heard anything about this movie, I can't imagine you going in to see it and then being disappointed in what you get. I knew what kind of a movie this was going to be. I knew it was going to be, you know, very dark, very black, and that's exactly what it is. Maybe I was surprised to the level it went, but that only made me like it even more. I love the fact that you put this on there. I left it off just hoping that you would, because that really was, all three of those movies, absolutely worthy of a place on the list.
Yeah, I'm bummed I didn't put 1 Hour Photo on, because he is so creepy. As creepy and bad as he is in Smoochie and Insomnia, like, it's almost next level in 1 Hour Photo, because he is on an indie pod. Like, he's not, his name isn't really carrying the movie, because he knows it's going to be seen by less. And this could be said about any movie we talk about. He committed. Say what you will about any of his movies, you always got 100% from Robin Williams.
Sometimes you got 130%.
Yeah, I never felt like he was just showing up for a paycheck. Even in those later movies, like even in Old Dogs, which I hope isn't in your top five.
It is not.
But he commits. Like, he's there, and you're getting full Robin Williams, whether it's Old Dogs, wacky physical comedy, or 1 Hour Photo. I mean, that movie's kind of irrelevant now because your 1 Hour Photo clerk is almost non-existent. But at the time, 1 Hour Photos were a huge thing, and you watch it and think, like, oh, this could be something. Like, this is just a regular guy.
Who kind of just falls in love with this family from developing their photos.
2002 was an awesome year for him.
It was. It was an awesome year for creepy Robin Williams. I think that's it for me in creepy Robin Williams. And it's not that, you know, he didn't do plenty of those roles. I guess I just prefer him in maybe lighter fare. And I don't know that you would necessarily associate lighter fare with the war in Vietnam, but I love me some Good Morning Vietnam, Barry Levinson's 1987 joint starring Robin Williams and Forest Whitaker. There are actually quite a few, when I started to think about it, movies about radio that I love. I could easily do a list on that at some point in the future. Maybe we will, maybe we won't. Who knows? One of the reasons that I fell in love with radio at a young age was Robin Williams, Adrian Cronauer. His character was maybe not a personification of Vietnam, but at the very least, he was wildly inappropriate and not exactly, I guess, what you would expect. In the same way, I think that the war in Vietnam wasn't really what it was portrayed to be. I think he was kind of, when he first, I think he moved from Greece to Vietnam to try and entertain the troops. He was not exactly as he was billed. His job was to just improve the troop morale. And he had no idea of what Vietnam actually was by the time he got there. So I think that, you know, maybe audiences that would have been watching the war unfold on the nightly news may have been in a similar situation. And before I was familiar with, like, Stern, Opie Anthony, or Don Imus, Robin Williams was kind of the first shock jock that I became aware of. I was able to see this movie as probably a 6 or 7 year old, and I loved it. Hey, that's the alien guy from TV. I think I would like to be a radio guy at some point in my life. He was just as egotistical as Stern or Opie and Anthony or those guys, but he did at least have the ability to change, which makes him, you know, a sympathetic character, whereas maybe you're not as sympathetic with the plight of Opie and Anthony, the first of his Oscar noms, but not the last.
This is one I saw in the theater, and I didn't like it at the time. It didn't hit me right away. I didn't get it. I was a dumb, what year was that?
1987.
87. So I was only like 8 or 9 years old. It didn't hit me. I didn't care about Vietnam. But then it was one that later on, when I was about 18, I saw Private Parts. And that movie hit me a lot because I wanted to go into – I had had a radio job when I was 16, and I didn't know what I wanted to do, but I know I wanted to make my own path. And it was after watching Private Parts and reading it, it's like, you know what? This is kind of the same thing. So I went back and I watched it, and 10 years later, appreciated it a whole lot more. And to this day, like, I'm almost mad at myself for not – I'm mad at little 8 or 9-year-old me for not getting it at the time because – it's a perfect blend of everything because it is crazy, wacky Robin Williams, but it's sympathetic, caring, like you empathize with Robin Williams. And it wasn't just, hey, Robin Williams is going to go out there and be wacky. He was a character. And that's what you could say about a lot of his movies, whether he was goofy, wacky Robin Williams or, you know, creepy Robin Williams. There was always a character there. And it never just seemed like
him playing a version of himself.
Yes, which is odd because something like, you know, I hate to spoil if it's on your list, like Patch Adams could
it's not.
Very easily be, oh, Robin Williams is playing a goofy doctor. But it's more than that. It's, you know, it's not my favorite. It's not on my list. It was an also-ran because it hit me at a point in my life where, you know, it brought me laughs where I needed them. But even then, like, it's not just Robin Williams putting on a clown nose and a doctor's jacket. Like, he was always really, really good. My number four, we're going to go back to Barry Levinson, another Barry Levinson joint. Probably not the most popular Robin Williams movie, but I have unashamedly loved this movie from the second I saw it in theaters in 1992. It is Toys, starring Robin Williams, Joan Cusack, LL Cool J. I love this movie. I absolutely adore this movie. My brother took me to see it. Again, I would have been 13 at the time. I love the colors. The look of the movie is very, very cool. The idea of the movie is beyond nonsensical. It's ridiculous, but I loved it. It clicked. It's just, okay, we're going to make toys and tie in a military aspect, and it just, there's a sense of danger. I really, really love this movie. It's fun. It's crazy. It's just, it's a joy. Like, it's just a ride. I feel like this movie gets so much hate. And one of our listeners, I think, dubs this as one of only 2 or 3 movies he's ever walked out of. But I enjoy this movie so much. And it's to the point where I haven't seen it in forever. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe this is 13-year-old me talking. But I loved it at the time. I haven't watched it in a while. But I think back, and I think LL Cool J laying in the couch, like LL Cool J against the wall. I really liked LL Cool J in this movie. I have so many fond memories of this movie that I do want to hunt it down and watch it with my kids just to see if, you know, maybe I was an idiot when I was 13, but I feel like my kids will get the same kind of joy out of it that I did. And I'll be damned if Toys may not be on anybody else in the world's top 5 Robin Williams movie, but fuck me, it's my number 4.
It's been a long time since I've seen it as well. I think the last time I saw it was in the theater. And I do remember liking it well enough, but whether it holds up or not, I can't say. But what I can be fairly certain of is one thing you can always say about Robin Williams is the roles that he takes and the way he does them, whether it is in Toys or in any of the other movies on our list, you can't really imagine another actor going in and doing it the same or better. He absolutely creates, inhabits, embodies these characters, whether they're characters you like or not. He absolutely just owns them. And there's something to be said for that. Even if Toys sucks, it's cool to watch him do his thing.
Watch him give a Patton-type speech to a room full of toys. I don't know how that doesn't bring joy to your heart. I don't know how many other actors could pull that off. That's a good point, because he takes those characters. He doesn't feel like Robin Williams just in this version of Robin Williams. He makes it to where, like, I can't picture somebody else playing Mrs. Doubtfire. I can't see somebody else, you know, as the creepy guy in 1 Hour Photo. Like, he takes the role and just owns it.
My number 3 is, this is one of my favorite characters that he's ever played. And actually, I don't like it quite as much as my number 2, but I like the character a lot more. Andrew in 2001's Bicentennial Man, directed by Chris Columbus, starring Robin Williams and Beth Davids and Sam Neill. There's kind of a lot going on in this one, too. I don't want to get to the point of hyperbole on this, but I think if you don't necessarily think of this as a Robin Williams movie, I think it's really one of the great science fiction films that has come out. And I love me some Blade Runner. And I think as much as that movie will make you think about what defines humanity, Columbus was able to adapt Isaac Asimov's work in a less, I don't want to say, you know, a less dingy way. Dystopian future, I think, very much defines Blade Runner. That story maybe could be set in a different time. Obviously, the technology would have to be there to have these robots that you really couldn't tell if they were human or not. But I think that maybe I was distracted as a kid by the lightsaber umbrellas. With Bicentennial Man, I don't feel like there was as much atmospherically to distract me from what they were trying to say with the movie. And I think that the evolution of the character that Robin Williams plays from a robot to android to actually finally human, the heart that he had as this character. I mean, obviously, you mentioned Patch Adams, a lot of heart in that role, a lot of heart in most of the roles that he had. But this, I think, is a perfect example of that. He's got heart that the Tin Man would have killed for. He's kind of like a Pinocchio who, instead of just wishing to be a real boy, evolves, takes matters into his own hands, and becomes what he desperately wants to be, and then argues that point. Seeing this movie the first time, a bit like you said with Good Morning Vietnam, I don't really think I liked it all that much. I was like, eh, that's okay. But after you see it the first time and you can kind of, you know, not just watch the character's age or, you know, Robin Williams becoming less of a robot, and you're able to just kind of maybe get into what the story is saying, I think it's a phenomenal movie. And I don't think people think of it as a great sci-fi flick, but it is. It doesn't have monsters. It doesn't have the space aliens, but I think it does what great science fiction can do. And it's make you think about either what it is to be human or kind of what our purpose is, but without distracting you with some of the, you know, laser swords and whatever else.
I'll be honest. I haven't seen Bicentennial Man. There's no reason.
Spoiler alert.
Yeah, there's no reason behind that. I haven't. But on Twitter and Facebook yesterday, a lot of people throwing out their favorite Robin Williams movie. This one gets mentioned quite a bit. Mentioned a lot as underrated, and it's cool to see. You know, he's got so many movies that are household names. To see something like Bicentennial Man be thrown out a bunch, it's pretty cool. And I'm glad it was on your list, because it obviously wasn't on mine. On my list at number three, though, from a director I'm not super into. I like Terry Gilliam enough, but, you know, I don't like all of his movies. One of them that I do love is 1991's The Fisher King with Robin Williams, Jeff Bridges. It was another Oscar nom for Robin Williams. He did not win this time, but such a good movie. Jeff Bridges is almost like the Robin Williams Good Morning Vietnam character. He's just, you know, in that, he's a powerful DJ, makes some mistakes. Robin Williams' life is affected by one of those mistakes, and he tries to find salvation through helping him. It's such a good movie, and this is one of those that's the perfect example of who else can you see play Perry? If you think back to The Fisher King, and you just think of how Robin Williams brings that character to life, and just think of the intricacies of the character and the little stuff that he does and how hell-bent he is on finding the Holy Grail, and just the fact that while he's doing all this, it's not just some crazy homeless guy. It's a guy that you want him to get the Holy Grail. You want him to get his life back together. You feel for him. You're sympathetic, and it's Robin Williams does that. Like, that's 100% Robin Williams. I mean, Mercedes Rule won the Oscar for this movie as supporting actor, and Jeff Bridges was, you know, one of, if we had a Jeff Bridges list, this is probably my top one. This movie is so good. Like, I cannot say enough about how much I love The Fisher King. It's my number three. So, I mean, yesterday was pretty hard. I love this movie so much. again, it's a nice balance. It's your Oscar-nominated actor, Robin Williams, and your eccentric, crazy Robin Williams. And he knew where that line was, and he knew how to mix them without going too far one way or the other. And this is a perfect example of it. And I adore this movie so much.
My number two is an example of the Oscar-nominated Robin Williams, but it's not necessarily the way over the top Robin Williams. I think when everyone tries to list your favorite Robin Williams joints, and I've just kind of asked people that I've seen over the course of today, just like ambush them, like top three right off the top of your head. There are a lot that get mentioned pretty regularly, and for good reason, because they're really good movies. And I really only have, I think, one on my list that seems like it comes up in a lot of people's. And I don't know why I have it at my number two, because I don't like it as much as I like Bicentennial Man. I guess I just felt the pressure to put it higher on the list because of, you know, maybe what it means to other people that are smarter than I am. But it's 1989's Dead Poets Society, directed by Peter Weir, starring Williams, Ethan Hawke, Robert Sean Leonard. There's really, when you think about it, or at least when I think about it, there's no reason that I should like this movie. I hate poetry, and I hate high school boys. However, I did like watching this movie in English class, and it seemed to be like a go-to for hungover English teachers the world over, from at least when I was in about seventh grade through high school. And I think it has some content that might make it inappropriate for a seventh grader. I don't know. Not the least of which is transcendentalism. I still don't know what the fuck that means. But what I can tell you is that Mr. Keating would have been amongst the coolest teachers I had ever had. And I think that's one of the things, you know, that is such a bummer about, you know, how things ended with Robin Williams is he seemed like a guy that no matter, you know, what role he was in or where he was, that he would have been like the absolute life of the room, would have been a guy that, you know, I think could have related with just about anyone. The way he was able, as Mr. Keating, to relate to all of his just whiny bitches as students and make them men is an accomplishment in and of itself. And that's just, I guess, what's so sad is he wasn't able to relate to himself in that same way. As far as a teacher, I mean, I had a lot of good teachers when I was a kid, and I don't mean to sell any of them short by saying that Robin Williams would have been the best. But like I said, he managed to shape a band of real pussies into some upstanding think-for-your-own-damn-self men. And maybe that's what transcendentalism means. I don't know. All I know from this movie is at any point in my high school career, I was just waiting for that one opportunity to stand up on my desk and say, "Oh, Captain, my Captain." Never did it.
I mean, this is one of those movies that gets brought up a lot. And I hate to keep going back to Twitter, but he had so many iconic movies and so many iconic things that, okay, just an image of the student standing on the desk. Like, somebody just posted that, and it's like gut-wrenching. Like, it tugs at your heart. Like, there's a picture of him hugging Aladdin. Like, all these, he's got so many lines. Like, "Oh, Captain, my Captain." Like, just, he's one of those.
"Good Morning, Vietnam." How you started the show.
Yeah. Like, he's got so many iconic moments in his career that, you know, if I say something, like, you know these lines. Like, you know lines from him. Everybody knows "Nanu Nanu," even if you've never seen "Mork and Mindy."
And everybody's probably got their favorite. One of my favorites is like an innocuous line from "Good Morning Vietnam" when he's getting reprimanded and the guy points to his arm and he goes, "What does 3 up and 3 down mean?" He's like, "The end of an inning." It's just so great.
And the thing is on his career, a lot of those are off the cuff. Mm-hmm. Like, he was known for going out there and just making it happen. And one of my favorite things on Twitter was not just from the movie side, but from the stand-up side. Like, all these actors and comedians just sharing Robin Williams stories. Like, Questlove had one about him and the Roots getting on an elevator and Robin Williams naming all of them and saying, like, "I bet you got on this elevator thinking this old white guy has no idea who we are, yet he knows all of them and their discography." Like, you know, just a lot of great stories shared on Twitter. And just Google news search for, or do a search for Robin Williams. Like, it was seriously
are you
like
still cashing those checks?
Huh?
Are you still cashing those checks?
No, no. It was amazing to see. Like, I loved, like, all night, just different people writing, you know, their memories of him, the ones that have met him. And just there was a tweet being posted around to him just randomly responding to a random fan in February. You know, a fan just tweeting like, oh, Robin Williams makes me laugh so much. Like, I needed that. And he just responds to, hey, thanks, I needed that tweet. Like, it's very depressing. And speaking of depressing, we'll move on to my number two. Directed by Penny Marshall, it is 1990's Awakenings. It was another Oscar nomination for he didn't get nominated for this movie. De Niro got nominated for this movie. Robin Williams got shafted because he's phenomenal in this movie. It draws parallels to Dead Poets Society, where Keating in Dead Poets Society, very driven, wants his students to be the best. In this one, his doctor character, Sayer, wants to be the best. Like but it's not, you know, Keating wanted his students to be the best. He wanted to be the best teacher so his students could be the best. Sayer wanted to be the best at what he was so that all these people could get their lives back, and that starts with De Niro. And I mean, I don't want to talk too much about the movie because it's a bummer. Like, it's a sad, sad ass movie, and I don't want to go down that road. But if you want to see just, you know, Robert De Niro proving why he's one of the biggest movie stars ever, and Robin Williams showing that he's not just a funny guy. Like, he's an actor.
To act on the same level is,
yeah,
more than held his own.
And this is 1990 De Niro, which, you know, 50 Cent has acted on 2011 De Niro's level. But 1990 De Niro was pretty much, De Niro's in a movie, it's an Oscar nom, pretty much. For Robin Williams to go toe-to-toe with that, I believe he got the Golden Globe that year, but he didn't get the Oscar nomination. Which is a shame because, yeah, okay, you take away De Niro's performance, Awakenings isn't the same movie, but you could say the same for Robin Williams. It's another one of those where you put somebody else across from De Niro when it's not the same movie. It doesn't have that same heart, and, you know, it doesn't pack that same emotional impact. And for Sayer, just for that character, just wanting these people's lives back and just wanting to be the best at what he does to save so many people, and the De Niro as one of those people, it's just such a phenomenal movie. I don't know where Penny Marshall went as a director. She made some great movies, and if we were ever to do a Penny Marshall list, this would be number one, far and away, because this was a whole other level for her. I love this movie. As much good as I said about The Fisher King, I could go on more about Awakenings. It's a lot more sad.
I guess I can bail us out with my number one. It's not much of a bummer at all. And I kind of got to thinking about, is it my favorite Robin Williams movie? Maybe not, but it is how, I mean, obviously I think Mork and Mindy, I'm always going to remember Mork from Mork. That's probably going to be, that's the first exposure I had to Robin Williams. But as I've stated many times on this podcast, this isn't TV on up. So that role aside, okay, what is it that I'm, like, when I think Robin Williams, what's the first thing that's always going to come to my mind? And you kind of tipped it earlier. It's his role as the genie from 1992's Aladdin, directed by Ron Clements, John Musker, starring some other people, but Robin Williams as the genie. I think I stated earlier, and I don't know, I maybe even kids' movies when I was talking about this, that, like, the role of the genie was made for Robin Williams. Quite literally, it was. It was written with him in mind at a time where, in 1992, Disney cartoons didn't cast A-list celebrities. They didn't cast B-list celebrities. They didn't cast C-list. They just didn't need it in their cartoons. Now, that doesn't mean that animated films didn't have big actors in it, because they did, but Disney didn't. And this absolutely just shattered that. Now you look at, you know, when Disney and Pixar were together, like Toy Story, the cast of Toy Story, absolutely full of A-list talent. But I don't think that we get there if Robin Williams doesn't take the role of Genie for scale. He got paid the lowest amount that he was allowed to take to do this role. And there were some things that kind of caused a rift between him and Disney for quite a while after that. That's really beside the point. The point was Robin Williams wasn't doing this for a paycheck. He was doing it because this movie, this character, allowed him to completely be Robin Williams, unhinged, pretty much unfiltered. I mean, as unfiltered as you can be in a child's movie. But from the impressions, the personality, I said earlier that all of his characters, you can't come up with an actor that could have done it better. There is no one walking the earth that could have played the genie as well as Robin Williams, let alone any better. This, to me, is always going to be kind of the apex of his abilities. And I don't know that there's a Disney character, and Disney's been making shit for 100 years. I don't know that there's a Disney character that I like more that is cooler than the genie.
Yeah, I'm not the biggest Disney guy fan, but I saw this in the theaters a few times. It was one of those that, like, you think back to Disney movies, and they didn't cast name actors, really. And when they did, they didn't promote them. But this is the first one I can think of, because this was not just Robin Williams. Gilbert Godfrey was very prominent in that. And both of those were really good performances. And it's like, oh, nobody else can do that. Because, like, yeah, Lion King had Matthew Broderick, but who cares? Like, nobody, you know, you don't see a picture of whatever Simba and think, oh, hey, there's Matthew Broderick.
Lion King was 2 years later. It was 1994.
Yeah.
Also had Jeremy Irons. But my point being that, yes.
That's what Disney, I mean. It's
right,
like
Disney
didn't
do this.
Care. They started to a little bit after this because
right,
of how
yeah.
well mm-hmm. it did. Because I know I remember David Spade and like Emperor's New Groove or whatever.
Yeah.
Like they started to go that way a little bit and stray from the formula. But it was just so weird because it was such a standout. Like it was such a standout performance in a Disney movie, which you'd never really had. You had standout movies from Disney, but I don't remember ever having such a standout performance from an animated cartoon as Robin Williams from Genie, because he absolutely stole the show. The movie was a massive hit, and you know, a large part because of him. My number one, it's a nice little transition. It's 1997's Good Will Hunting. I love this movie so much. I love the Matt Damon character. I love the Ben Affleck character. Like, I love everything about this movie. But no scenes hit me harder than the ones with Robin Williams. If you take out that angle, or you put somebody else playing that doctor, I don't think I care as much about the movie. If you put yourself in Will's shoes, it's like, okay, I could see opening up to this guy. Like, he's charming.
Relatable.
He's charming. He's charismatic. He's relatable. He's patient. You know, he's not over the top. Like, he's everything great about Robin Williams. And his scenes are so understated in this movie. Like, at no point is he Robin Williams. You know, he's not that goofy, wacky Robin Williams. The most he gets is him just explaining his wife waking up from her own fart. And which is completely improv from him. But what you get from that shot of Matt Damon laughing is so genuine, because it's Robin Williams just going on about this rant, making up this story about his wife waking herself up with a fart. And you have Matt Damon in the moment. Moments like that make that movie, because that movie feels so genuine and so real. And it's not your fault. That scene still gives me goosebumps just to think about. Like, I mean, that's one of those lines you could put on Twitter and just kind of make me bring a tear to my eye. Like, it's not your fault. Like, it's such a simple line, but his delivery of it, his performance in that scene, yes, it shouldn't have been his first Oscar, but he absolutely deserved that Oscar. And my favorite tribute to go up on Twitter was the bench that they filmed the scenes on in Boston. Somebody put flowers on it and just wrote in front of it, "I went to see about a girl." Or, "Sorry, guys, I have to go see about a girl." And it's, like, so good. Like, he's got so many of those lines that's just so brilliant. And him in this movie, he didn't have to come out into this. This was made by two 20-some-year-old punks that had no career so far. I mean, nothing substantial. He didn't have to jump in there. I mean, yeah, I'm sure Gus Van Sant helped, but he didn't just show up for a paycheck, which he could have. They'd have been ecstatic to have Robin Williams in their movie, even if it's 50% Robin Williams. But he committed and he got the Oscar. And the only shame about that is that it was his first Oscar on his fourth nomination. But it's so good because when you look back, like, how many people realize he's a four-time Oscar-nominated actor?
I think that's – we did manage to get them all in, didn't we?
Yeah, because it was Good Morning Vietnam, The Fisher King.
Dead Poets Society,
and Good Will Hunting.
Yeah.
I don't think – I think people forget that. I think they know about the win for Good Will Hunting, but I think you forget that was his fourth nomination, and three of those came over – I think they were 89, 91, 93.
Yeah, this one was the latest, 97.
Yeah, and that's – I'm not the biggest Oscar guy, but his speech, like, go watch his Oscar acceptance speech because it's everything you love about Robin Williams on screen. It's you're watching this guy that's wanted this so bad, and, you know, he knows he should have gotten it already, but he wouldn't tell you that. Just to see the joy he expresses getting that Oscar, absolutely phenomenal, and I can't say enough good things about this movie. Like, this movie hit me at 97. That's right as I was graduating high school. So I absolutely love this movie. Like, oh, you got to go do what you want to do. That's awesome. Oh, these two dudes, like, everything on screen and behind the scenes for this movie, like, hit 18-year-old me graduating high school because it was everything I wanted to do and everybody I wanted to be all within one. So Good Will Hunting will always be a big part of my life, and my favorite parts of that movie are the scenes, because the chemistry with him and Matt Damon is just so good.
One of the things that kind of caught me the most was, I think today I was just tooling around in the car, and a radio station just played the audio from that scene, It's Not Your Fault, and like, just driving down the road, it hits you. You don't even have to see it. Like, you can just hear it, and it still carries all the weight. And not that I'm the world's, you know, number one movie critic by any stretch of the imagination, but I think that's when, you know, if you're questioning whether or not the performance is good, you know, if you could just listen to it 20 years later and it still, you know, carries the same weight, then, yeah, you're probably on to something.
Yeah. As far as also rans, I'm just going to go through my list because a lot of these have been mentioned. 1 Hour Photo was hard to leave off. I mentioned that. World's Greatest Dad was probably the hardest one to leave off.
Sneaky.
But it's sneaky, but it's very sad because if you watch it now, the parallels between.
Yeah.
I don't think I can watch World's Greatest Dad for a while. It's a very good movie, though. That's the darkest I saw him go there for a while. That was the first I saw him go, like. But yeah, I really like that. Insomnia, What Dreams May Come. Would be on this list, but it's going to be on my list next week, whatever that episode is. World According to Garp, I'm kind of surprised hasn't been mentioned yet because that was kind of, you know, outside of Popeye, that was his welcome to the big screen. The Survivors with Walter Matthau I think is an underrated one that doesn't get as much love as it needs. Good Morning Vietnam, Dead Poets Society. Hook, I'm shocked we haven't mentioned.
I was certain with your love for Peter Pan.
I do love Peter Pan.
List.
And
that's
this,
why I left it off.
If this held up better, it would be on there. I loved Hook as a kid. I don't love it as much now, but it was hard to leave off.
Mrs. Doubtfire,
not mentioned. Patch Adams. That was at a point in my life where I was going through some really bad stuff, but I had Patch Adams on DVD, and it was pretty much the only comedy I owned. So I watched it a lot when I needed cheering up, and it, you know, it's a dark movie. It takes some turns. And then him in 9 Months. I think 9 Months is a great romantic comedy. And his – I didn't put it in my top five because it's not really – it's not a Robin Williams movie. But him in 9 Months is just – it's fantastic.
The Night at the Museum movies I think are probably just –
I don't think they're good. He's good in them.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, I don't love them, but I think his performance was really good. And I haven't seen The Butler yet. Where
he's
played
Eisenhower.
He played a different president. I do need to see that movie, but I guess that's kind of the thing, is he's got four in the can. Another Night at the Museum sequel, Merry Friggin' Christmas, The Angriest Man in Brooklyn, and Boulevard. Those are all, as of right now, set for 2014-ish releases. And obviously up until... And there's another one.
He's also a voice in that Simon Pegg Absolutely Anything. That I can't wait for.
Yeah, I mean, but even until yesterday, the Mrs. Doubtfire sequel was still listed on the IMDb page. So, obviously, you know, we're going to see him for a while. And it is unfortunate that, that's going to be the end of it. I think we said the same thing with Philip Seymour Hoffman is, you know, you have someone that's that talented and they're not able to kind of put it together.
And the thing is like just the overall positive, because you always have your assholes that want to poke jokes when somebody dies or anything, or get mad at people for, you know, expressing sympathy over somebody who
I haven't
care
heard
about.
Any of that.
I've seen a little bit of it, but who cares? The point is like, I've never seen this much outpouring of love towards somebody. And it thought, like, in my head, I'm thinking, like, who would hit the most? I think Bill Murray would hit the most, like, would be the same kind of outpour as this. But it's just, like, it's somebody who, yeah, okay, maybe he hasn't been as relevant on a mainstream level in the past whatever many years. Yeah, he was on whatever CBS or ABC last year, but... from a movie standpoint, and I mean, we haven't even mentioned like comic relief, like what him and Whoopi and Billy Crystal did.
Yeah.
That was a long running thing. They did a lot of good, you know. So you say what you will about him as a stand up, like he has his reputation there. But Mark Maron summed it up. Mark Maron had an episode with Robin Williams in 2010. He re released it. If you haven't listened to it, listen to it because it's a great chat. But he summed it up about like, because Robin Williams was always a joke thief, as I say that air quotes, because he would be accused of stealing jokes, and maybe he did. You know, when you're talking that fast off the cuff, like I believe it. Like I don't think it was intentional, but I believe he did. But you don't get. He's not where he was because he stole jokes. You know, he's not where he was because of his wacky stand up. Like you don't get 4 Oscar noms, 1 win.
He wasn't playing a stand up in any of those.
Yes, and. He played a lot of doctors. I didn't realize that until doing my list. He played doctors a lot. And it's such a good, like, good career. Like, when you look back, like, okay, maybe I didn't love all his movies, but you knew what you were getting with Robin Williams. Whatever the character was, you were getting full commitment. And it's hard to say that about a lot of actors because there are some that'll just take a movie off or something. And I never felt like Robin Williams did that. I feel like he was in it all the way, all the time, and he'll be absolutely missed. So, but those were our favorite Robin Williams movies. What are yours? Let us Twitter at @moviesonup, facebook.com/moviesonup, moviesonup@gmail.com. Enter the tagline contest this week. Just mail us the title of a Robin Williams movie. Bonus points if you can name one that we didn't mention this episode.
Yeah, there's a couple.
There's a few. Like Robots wasn't mentioned.
Yeah.
Happy Feet, Man of the Year. Just the right stuff or the one with Kurt Russell. So, yeah, if you can name ones we haven't mentioned, that would be bonus points and give him a better chance to win the famous Movies on a prize package. We'll be back next week with our favorite Life After Death movies.
We had already had it scheduled.
It was already scheduled. Yeah. And What Dreams May Come will be on there. So, spoiler alert. And until then,
Nanu Nanu.